Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Nareit REIT Report podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Borkson-Keto, and today I'm joined by Ed Fritsch, CEO of Raleigh, North Carolina-based Highwoods Properties and a former Nareit chair. This month, Ed will step down as CEO, ending 3 decades of service at the Office REIT. Ed, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sarah. Glad to be here.
So as you prepare to step aside, how would you describe Highwoods as it stands today, and what are some of the challenges and opportunities you see ahead for the company?
Well, I guess first, as I step aside, I would have to say and be remiss if I didn't how proud I am of the phenomenal collection of truly good people who comprise the Highwoods team. I've always said that our best assets are our people, and I try to be genuine that, and if you got to meet my coworkers, I think you would subscribe to that philosophy as well. So I'm extraordinarily excited about my retirement after 37 years, but I'm also going to dearly miss the people that I get to work with here at Highwoods and across the industry. I think for us, opportunities and challenges, our balance sheet we're very proud of. It's in very good shape. When we went public in 94, we were heavily encumbered, and today only one building is posted as collateral. So I think that's a significant enhancement, and the quality of our balance sheets provided us with significant flexibility to dramatically improve our portfolio, and I think that will continue. I think the challenges mostly lie in the economy, much more external than internal. We all know it's well beyond the ninth inning. But so many aspects remain positive, like interest rates and demand, expanding populations, et cetera. So I think the opportunities remain vast, and I'm excited about what the team is going to be able to do. We just recently announced a market rotation plan, and I think that it and other plans will continue to create great opportunities for us.
And you mentioned the decision to take Highwoods public in 1994. Looking back, is there anything about that process that you would have done differently or that surprised you in some way?
Well, I guess I would focus on your words, process and surprised. For we older people, I think we look back at that point in time, and it's fun to think about it because if you remember back in 93, 94, when a lot of us went public, it was 93 when we started understanding the definition of a REIT. But it was really the advent of computer processing in the small business environment. And so as we started to engage with advisors, accountants, and lawyers, et cetera, and they began their litany of questions with regard to the history of the company and how it stood, there was a demand for a lot of data. And back then, you weren't scanning digitally for keywords, and you weren't able to data mine by entering in a request into a database. It was done by hand and 10-key calculator and pulling paper files and writing down the answers. So I think I look back at what we didn't have in the way of technology then versus what we have today, and I think a lot of the companies and a lot did go public in 93, 94 in REITM. I look back at that time as, boy, I sure wish we had the tools that we have today in order to pull all that information together.
Now, a year after becoming CEO, Highwoods implemented a strategic plan that remains in place today. What was the impetus behind that plan?
Well, there are a number of things. Probably the most predominant thing was I had recently read Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. And his book was extremely impactful to me. In fact, I think I've subsequently bought over 100 of those books and shared them with others. And I kind of became a Jim Collins zealot. I have an autographed copy of the book from him. And I just, as I read it and reread it, I thought there was so much good information in there that we could run with. And I knew Highwoods was a good company, but I was keenly interested on how we could make it better. And so we thought to take the time to stand back at a point of transition and say, how could we implement change and make it better was important. So the team that we had assembled all agreed to a pledge that no person, no process, and no property was sacred. And so we popped the hood and we questioned every part of the engine. And we also incessantly told ourselves that just because we had always done something one way didn't mean that that was the right way to do it. And I think as we questioned ourselves and we looked at every component of what we're doing, it enabled us to compile a strategic plan that continues to be our plan today and will be going forward.
Now, during your 37 years at the company, you've had various positions. How important is it for you as CEO to have had personal insight into those different roles within the company?
Well, I think that tenure has given me the gift of having had the opportunity to serve in lots of different roles. And, you know, at first, when we were a small private company and there was only a dozen or so of us, as you would expect in small companies, everybody does a lot of everything. There are no specialists. Everybody does whatever needs to be done. And as a result of that, you get to learn different disciplines within the business. And then as we grew, I had the good fortune of being able to do lots of different things. And I deeply believe that you can be more effective in managing a task or a discipline if you yourself have done it. I remember years ago when I was young and in school that I swam a lot. And I swam on a number of teams. And I would swim in the mornings and I would swim in the evenings and weekends. And it was what I did. And there was one swim coach who was he was hard nosed, and he would walk the deck as you swam, and he'd whistle at you and yell at you, and he was motivating at some point, and then it would always cliff into frustrating. But I, to this day, I just never saw him in the pool, and so when I would get frustrated as he whistled and yelled at us, I always wondered why. Why he wasn't, I'd like to see what he could do in the pool.
Right.
And I think that's just so true across the board that if you've done something, you have a much better level of understanding and empathy, and you connect better with the other people who are doing it. And so I think it was a gift to be able to play in so many roles and then leverage that information to the good of the company.
Now, looking back again, what were some of the ways that Highwoods weathered the Great Recession, and were there lessons to be taken from that episode?
So, yeah, the global financial crisis was a dramatic turn of events all the way around the world. And I guess in hindsight, what I would do is never underestimate the goodness of being lucky. And I underscore that word lucky in its true definition. I like to say that there was a wealth of wisdom behind our timing, but the fact is that we, like so many others, never saw the depth of such a global financial crisis coming down the road. We had luckily rolled out our strategic plan, as you mentioned. We did that in January of 2005, and that plan launched us towards improving our portfolio, but even more so our balance sheet. And so in the selling of so many of our what we deemed non-core assets, we generated significant proceeds. And we had a choice of what to do with those proceeds, and we could either redeploy them into other assets or we could pay down debt. And we very luckily chose to pay down debt. We paid down a heap of debt. And then the financial crisis came, and we had just completed a lot of this debt reduction right before the crisis hit. And in hindsight, it looks like we knew what was coming and we battened down the hatches before the weather got bad. But it was truly just luck and fortuitous that we were able to end up with that timing. And so I think we're the only office REIT or the only office REIT that hadn't reduced its dividend during the recession or the form of payment during the crisis. And we feel very fortunate to have come through it the way we did. And I think the lesson learned is you want to build a race car that can get around the track as fast as it can. And that's what shareholders are investing you to do, is to win some races and earn them some money. At the same time, I think that as you're taking out things that make the car lighter and be able to go faster, you're sometimes taking out some of the safety equipment as well. So the lesson learned is to, you know, have a fast car that you can skillfully drive around the track, but leave enough in it so that if there's a wreck, you know, you can survive it to race the next race. And I think that's the way that we've built Highwoods.
Okay. And we're hearing a lot these days that for corporate America, it's not just about making profits for shareholders, but also giving back. Is that a shift that you yourself have witnessed during your career? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's something maybe that you and I learned in kindergarten, but not just you and me, but I think our parents learned it and their parents learned it and their parents learned it. I think giving back has been around in some form or another for, you know, from the beginning of time. I think the ancient Hebrews in like 2500 BC tithed, so that the concept's been around, I think, forever. And I think it is discussed more today, and it might be discussed more today because all of us are carrying around, you know, a printing press or the ability to do a podcast. And we, you know, so many of us can broadcast today. So I think that topic is more often discussed, but I'm not sure that it's more embedded in people or corporations than it ever was. You know, I watched my parents help others and others help them. I've watched businesses help communities, and communities benefit from that since the outset of my career. So I think that people have been caring and generous, and I think in our country in particular, I like to take pride in the volume of support that and giving that enterprises and families and individuals make in the United States for others here and around the world. And I do hope that is part of our core, I hope it continues to increase. But I don't think that it's anything new. I think our forefathers were very deliberate about how they had done that in the past, and it's our responsibility as we get to stand on their shoulders to carry that forward.
Now, as you look at younger people coming up through the ranks at Highwoods and elsewhere in corporate America, do you have any advice on work-life balance? Do you think things have changed? We're so busy these days. Do you think it's more difficult to get that balance?
I do. It's, you know, the world can be 24/7. All you have to do is allow it, and a lot of us do. But I have two thoughts on that. One is I'm convinced after searching these years that there is no secret sauce. And I've talked with people like you and lots of others who, you know, are in search of that, but you never, there's no like setting that you can put it on and say, okay, if I put it on 72 degrees, I'll always be comfortable. And the analogy I often use is many of us at one point in time or another have taken a baseball bat and put the barrel, the thicker part, up in the air and put the knob in our hand. And we've tried to balance that bat in our hand. And the truth of the matter is you can never find a spot where you can just hold your hand and that bat will stand still. You're constantly adjusting your hand so that bat will stay standing up straight in your hand. And I think that constant movement in order to maintain that balance so that bat doesn't fall is how a lot of us run our lives, because there's a calling. You know, gravity's pulling it one way or the other, or life's pulling us in one direction or another. And it could be at home, it could be at work, it could be in your head, it could be at some community organization that you're involved in. You know, it could be your health. It just, you know, there's constant callings all the time, and so you're having to constantly move your hand and adjust for that. And so I don't think there's a secret sauce, and I think it's something that we all search for, and we just stay after it, and you have to day after day.
And finally, what's next on your agenda?
Well, I've put in a lot of hours here. I've never been one who figured out how to take all of my allotted vacation, but I don't think that's a good trait, nor a trait that anyone should ever strive to emulate. And candidly, I believe that the number of hours that I've put in throughout the years is born out of my, at best, modest IQ. So as a result of the hours that I've put in here, I do have an uber-sized bucket list, and I'm very excited about unleashing on it. And it's got lots of projects and lots of trips involved in that. I'm also fortunate to be involved in a number of community projects and organizations, along with service over at UNC Chapel Hill. And I very much enjoy my opportunity to serve on the board of National Retail Properties and local organizations here. So I'll by no means be idle. I'm very excited about this next chapter, and there's no doubt that I'll be the loudest one cheering for the bleachers for my team here at Highwoods.
Well, that sounds good. Ed, best of luck to you from all of us at NAREIT.
Well, thanks, Sarah. You mentioned NAREIT, and one of the highlights of my career is, you said at the beginning, that I'm a past chair, and having the opportunity to become involved in NAREIT really is a career highlight. Once you get inside the tent and you get to meet people like you and Steve and Sheldon and Robert and Bob and Bonnie, and on goes the list of phenomenal people, and the goodness that you all collectively do for our industry, I think is underrated by some and greatly appreciated by others. And it's a terrific organization with phenomenal leadership, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity I've had to be involved with y'all.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe or leave a review on iTunes. And for more information on REITs, don't forget to check our website, REIT.com.